You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Gold Hawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Gold Hawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
All right, 1220 on Zoomer Radio. I'd like you to meet Kevin Dooley. He's a researcher and an inventor. He recently retired from a 40-year career with Pratt & Whitney Canada, gas turbine engine manufacturer, in case you didn't know, but I bet you did. And for the last 15 years, he worked in the Advanced Engineering Group in the position of Fellow of Emerging Technologies. Kevin Dooley is also a recognized inventor with over 100 U.S. patents covering five separate disciplines: electronics, electromagnetics, acoustics, hydrodynamics, and instrumentation. I'm going on and on about this because I want everyone to know, Kevin Dooley, what an expert you are when it comes to what we have referred to for a long time now here on Zoomer Radio as infrasound, right?
Infrasound, yes.
Infrasound. That's the proper terminology. That's what
correct.
We should be saying. Let me just do a bit of a primer with you so we can hear directly from you exactly what's going on here. How is the infrasound produced by the wind turbine in the first place? What's actually happening?
The way a wind turbine functions is that that the blades themselves on the turbine are just like wings of an aircraft. They're very similar. And as they rotate and as the wind blows across them, a very low pressure is developed on the blades themselves, which is used to apply torque to the generator. So the blades are effectively forcing the rotation of a generator, which is inside the cowling, inside the hub.
Right.
So there's a very low pressure on each of those blades, and as that low pressure passes the tower, it's influenced by the tower itself, so that there's an interaction between this low pressure, sort of a balloon, if you can imagine, on the blade, and as it passes the tower.
As it passes the standard.
The standard,
is what you're talking about.
As it passes that, there's an interaction between the low pressure and the tower, which causes a condition which results in these waves propagating away from the turbine. If there was no tower, you wouldn't have a problem.
If they somehow were suspended midair.
Right. Magically, if it was suspending in midair,
really?
You would
so
not have
tower.
A propagating. You
okay.
wouldn't have propagating waves.
And so, when the blade comes around and goes past the tower, essentially the infrasound. But you kind of describe it as a mini change in barometric pressure. That's really what you're talking.
That's
about.
That's precisely what it is. Yes.
Okay.
If you were to stand very close to the blade yourself. And be in this balloon, if you like, as it came around, you'd be sick pretty fast because you're basically the barometric pressure effectively around your body is changing as that blade passes. It drops to a low value and goes back up again.
Okay. Now, the other notable thing you say in all the information I tried to wade through, boy, you guys know a lot about these sound things, I tell you. It was some of it is very complex, but some of the basic messages I think ring true with a lot of us who've been involved in this. And that's the effect it can have on humans who happen to be too close. And you can debate all day what too close is. But the effect being what you call motion sickness. And when I think of all the people that we have talked to who live too close to turbines, some of the things that they describe really – you could also describe as motion sickness.
Definitely.
So that you think that's exactly how we should be describing this.
Yes, I do. I believe that motion sickness itself, at least certain types of motion sickness, infrasound is clearly involved. For instance, for a vertical motion, when you move up and down a certain distance, let's say you're moving up and down a meter in a sort of a cyclic way on a boat or something like that.
Right, bouncing through the waves,
right.
Yeah.
The atmospheric pressure around you is fluctuating.
And right.
Yes, so this is exactly the same thing as infrasound. You cannot tell the difference. If you made a measurement of infrasound on a boat that was pitching up and down like this, you would have a fairly high level of infrasound. So hypothetically, what I'm saying is that motion sickness may indeed be due to infrasound. There's also infrasound in cars and other types of vehicles.
Yeah, it doesn't just come from turbines. It comes from a lot of different sources,
doesn't it? Yes, it does. It's the cyclic infrasound that seems to be the problem. Random infrasound, which occurs naturally and has been around us since the beginning of time, doesn't affect us.
It's the regular pounding away.
It's cyclic.
So, in effect, these people could be described as being seasick in a way.
Yes, effectively. I believe it is motion sickness, quite honestly, and I wrote a paper to that effect, which is published.
Well, and you were speaking of some of these issues with the American Acoustics Association as well?
Yes, actually, that's who's published both of my papers on infrasound.
Yeah.
And really, there's an equation which I've developed which indicates clearly that even motion sickness trials that were done in the 60s, 70s.
This is the Macaulay study.
Had extremely high levels of infrasound during the trials, and all these people were doing was measuring nausea.
So really, well, that's why you call it the emotion sickness index, right?
That's right. That's exactly it. They put people in a little elevator type device and close it up and air condition it and move it up and down a certain amount and see how long it takes for people to get sick.
Some of the other symptoms described, however, by people who live close to wind turbines includes things like a rise in the level of blood pressure and an inability to sleep, get a good night's sleep.
Yes.
But both of those things would seem to be somewhat indicative of a motion sickness, wouldn't
they? Yes, I believe so. And I'm not a medical expert in any way. However, infrasound, internally, it exists in our bodies. Your heartbeat results in an infrasound pressure inside your body. Mm-hmm. When you breathe, you generate infrasound, because all it is a slow variation in a pressure. But because that's been there, I mean, it's a part of our system, and our central nervous system is aware of it being there. If you now, introduce us a foreign source of cyclic infrasound, all bets are off as to what exactly it's
going
to do.
Well, the two would beat against each other,
it's
wouldn't
quite
they?
Possible.
Wouldn't that be somewhat disruptive?
I would think so.
Yeah. Does it matter, does size matter here in terms of the size of the wind turbine? Do you get a larger variance in barometric pressure with a bigger one as opposed to a smaller one?
Yes, you do. The pressure variations are directly related to the power output, actually, of the machine.
Yeah, they're rated in the 2.5 megawatts these days, 3 megawatts.
Yeah. So if it's running at full power, you've got a high wind and you're running at full power, the levels will be quite loud. Sometimes, if it's running at an inefficient way at a low wind, you may also get a lot from that too.
Now, I wonder if it's the same with seasickness. I mean, some people do get seasick. Others do not.
That's right.
So the effect of this infrasound would affect some people but would not affect others.
Absolutely.
So that's what makes it elusive in terms of trying to track it down, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And I think part of the problem is as well that generating infrasound in a controlled source in an environment where you can actually test for the effects of infrasound on people is difficult because at the moment there are none available that are practical to use.
Well, the Ontario government itself discovered that they were all these complaints of infrasound, they really can't measure it. Difficulty measuring ordinary decibel levels of audible sound. Mm-hmm. And the thing to remember about infrasound is essentially you can feel it, I guess, but you can't hear it.
You can't hear it. It's obviously a natural thing that it's below the level, frequency level that we can perceive. Otherwise, we'd be hearing our own heartbeats and all of the other things that are going on in our body. So it's naturally evolved out that we can't hear it. Mm-hmm. If we could, it'd deafen us all the time. So so it's not a part of our hearing ability, but it does still, the ears do still detect it. Dr. Alex Salt in
we've spoken to him many times. Yeah. He says he talks about how it affects the cilia of the ear, how it affects the inner organs of the body.
Right.
It's profound,
mm-hmm.
the medical effects. Okay, now we're talking about, or have been so far, one wind turbine. What about a farm of 140 turbines? What then?
Interestingly enough, we've just recently done some work in Australia and measurements of infrasound from a wind turbine park or farm.
Yeah.
which actually has something like 37
okay,
wind turbines all in a row from north to south. And the sound level that you get from that facility is not much more.
Really?
Yes. Because of the way that the waves propagate, they tend to propagate basically in a in sort of a tube shape behind the turbine,
mm-hmm.
and so and it doesn't really spread out this the spinning mode type of thing.
So the effects would be no more dire with those turbines than with a single turbine
of the same power.
The yeah.
predicted the numbers that are predicted are very similar based on the work that we've done.
Would that depend in part on the configuration and the topography and other variables like that, or do you think this rule would stand up?
It seems to stand.
Mm-hmm.
There's still lots of work to be done, but this one survey that we did was to try to test this spinning mode theory against another wind turbine type.
Right.
And it predicted the same values as for a single turbine of the same size here. And interestingly enough, you know, one of the measurements that we made, which was 11 kilometers away from the park, was on the other side of a mountain range, which was higher than the wind turbines. And we still measured basically the same amplitude of sound.
Really?
Yes.
How can you account for that?
Yes, it appears, and this is still a theory. It needs to be tested by others. It appears that this these spinning modes that come off of the wind turbine near the tower form a tube-shaped pattern. It's spiraling. That's right. And the noise itself that people perceive is actually coming radially from this tube. If this tube's going over your house, you hear it there, and this tube goes on forever. It doesn't really diminish very much. It doesn't go on forever, but it goes on for a long way. And so the sound level is not related so much as how far away you are from the turbine, mm-hmm. but how far away you are from the tube that's coming from the turbine.
Well, and you correct me if I'm wrong. At one point, you measured some evidence of wind turbine disturbance, infrasound, 125 kilometers away from the closest wind
turbine.
That's
correct, yes. Yeah.
So to say that it travels is a bit of an understatement.
Yes.
Okay. All right, my guest is Kevin Dooley, who is an expert in these kinds of things, as you can hear.
Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.
Well, 1238 on Zoomer Radio. My guest is Kevin Dooley, who's a researcher and an inventor, knows a great deal about wind turbines and the infrasound that we've talked about for quite some time now here on Zoomer Radio. And we were just speaking about the range, how far the infrasound can travel. What effect does the infrasound have if you're near a wind turbine and you're in your house?
Yes.
Does it make it better or does it make it worse to be inside a house?
Actually, it seems to be worse for a couple of different reasons.
Worse inside the house?
Inside the house, yes. Yeah. The house can have resonances itself at the same frequency that the pressure fluctuations are occurring. And pressure fluctuations, I say that because that's what infrasound is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fluctuation in the barometric pressure, very small,
mm-hmm.
nonetheless. So the pressure fluctuations around the house actually will cause very tiny deflections of the house, but that affects the pressure inside the house as well. And so you can end up with resonances as well, say in a chimney, a tube of some kind, or if you have an attic that's, you know, maybe 7 or 8 meters across with hard walls at each end, you may get a standing wave in the attic that can give you some problems as well.
Meaning that the motion sickness index can be reasonably too high in your house.
Yes.
Depending on how close you are to the wind turbine.
That's correct.
What about Port Elgin? You've been there. You've seen that one turbine.
Yes.
That sits not totally surrounded by houses. There's the airport lands on the one side, but very, very close a lot of houses.
Yes, very close.
Well, what's your determination in all of that? What did you find when you went there?
Well, certainly the infrasound levels in the homes in the area is very high, and there are a number of people that are affected by it, of course, and I'm sure that people have complained about it.
Oh, in fact, some people are, and some already have moved. Yes. Some people are, if you can't get a decent night's sleep,
that's right.
Your health can be destroyed.
Yes, that's right.
All right.
From the loss of sleep.
Yeah, and people have said, well, it's only one wind turbine, but as you've said in the past little while, that one wind turbine can be the source of an awful lot of disruption of the barometric pressure. That's really what we're talking
about. Yes, it is that. It's a cyclic fluctuation in barometric pressure.
Is there any way to fix it? Is there any way, first off, for the wind turbine, unless it was hanging in midair, as you said earlier, any way for the wind turbine not to produce infrasound?
Not as far as I know. Because there are low pressures on the blades and the blades are rotating and they're interfering with the tower, I don't think there's any way of having a wind turbine that doesn't produce infrasound.
We've seen those models of helix wind turbines, you know, the sort of tall columnar things. Mm-hmm. They would still produce infrasound?
An egg beater type of
thing? Yeah, that kind of a thing.
It'll still do the same thing, yes.
Okay. All right, then what about at the other end of things? Is there anything you can do to shield yourself, at least when you're sleeping, for crying out loud, from the infrasound, from that disruption?
Yes, there is actually, though there will be shortly. A business partner and I have been working on a machine, actually, which is like an air conditioner that's located in the home, which stabilizes the pressure in the home so that it basically suppresses infrasound, cyclic infrasound. It's tuned specifically for use with wind turbines, but it can be used with other systems. And it's designed to stabilize the pressure, the infrasonic pressure in the home, so that it doesn't fluctuate. And this way you can at least be inside the home and be protected from infrasound.
Without getting too technical, how exactly does it do that? How does your machine do that?
It controls the pressure in the house. It's like it's almost like a reversible compressor, which actually is breathing from between inside and outside of the house. And there are a couple of sensors, one which is in the attic area and another one which is in the home, which measure the pressure fluctuations and adjust this compressor to continuously correct the pressure in the home. To maintain it as a stable value rather than allowing it to fluctuate at the wind turbine frequency.
Are you out in the pointed end of the ship with this?
Fairly well. We're planning to. I don't think anyone else is doing this. We've got a patent application in, We're sort of patent pending.
Well, you've had pretty good success with your patent so far.
So far,
haven't you?
Yeah, so far.
Okay. And but what about the work in terms of the nature of the infrasound and describing it as motion sickness? That's pretty unique to you, isn't it?
Actually,
or is it?
In a way, it is. I don't think anyone has actually pointed out that motion generates infrasound.
Yeah.
Yes, motion, particularly vertical motion on a ship or something like that.
If you think of a ship bouncing through the waves, going up and down, it's the same effect.
It's the same effect because the atmospheric pressure changes with elevation. So if you bounce up and down about a meter, you're actually being exposed to almost 100 decibels of infrasound at the frequency that you are bouncing up and down.
And to anyone who's ever been seasick, they know how incredibly unpleasant that can be.
That's for sure.
Yeah? Okay. Here's Jim on the line from Hanover. Jim, do you have a question or a comment?
Yes, I have a question for Mr. Dooley.
Yeah.
Has he ever felt any effects with working around these turbines or stayed in one place long enough where people have complained of getting sick and actually experienced that seasick feeling himself?
Actually, I haven't experienced it. What I tend to notice is headaches more than any kind of nausea.
Yeah. A lot of people report headaches, too.
But I don't notice nausea. I am also not prone to motion sickness.
Okay.
No, neither am I. You see, and here we are campaigning against this kind of sound. I and it's not a boast. I've never been seasick. I, seem to take to that sort of thing. And Jim, that's why some people will say, oh, it's got to be in your heads because it doesn't affect me, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I was just wondering, with all the scientific stuff going on, you know, some of these people, like a government, could spend a few weeks at one of these places and see if what they experience.
You remember my invitation? I invited Dalton McGinty to come out and for a sleepover and spend a night in a home near a wind turbine, but no, wouldn't do it. Thank you very much, Jim, for your thoughts. Does anyone know what percentage of people would be subjected, would be affected by motion sickness? Does anybody know?
I don't have the information available. It's only, you know, it's a fairly small percentage of the population that's sensitive to that.
But then you say, but what, even so, you can't ruin people's lives.
No, it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't really matter, does it?
Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.
12:50 on Zoomer Radio. My guest is Kevin Dooley, a researcher into such issues as infrasound, part of the engineering history he's had, first working for Pratt & Whitney. 40 years you were there?
Yes,
40 years. Okay. Yeah. All right, let's take some calls here. People I know will have some questions. And here's Alan from Mississauga. Alan, what's your question?
Yes, good afternoon. You know, I did a little bit of research a while back on these wind turbines, and it's the only area or the only other country that had the problems that I could research on was Australia. I think it was Southwest Wales or something in Australia.
And New South Wales.
That was passed where they had to be so many feet away from the wind turbines. But where... What I don't understand is that I did not read anything about Europe, like, you know, the Netherlands and places like that, where there's just thousands of these wind turbines. And, no one has really had any problems. And
all
I'm
right.
just wondering if they were built differently or whatever.
Well, that's not exactly true, but we'll get Kevin to... comment on that. Mm-hmm. Certainly, yes, in New South Wales and other parts of Australia, there are a lot of problems. There are problems many parts of the world.
That's
it's
right.
not hard to find these days.
I think they've actually been banned in certain parts of England and in Scotland, I think.
Yes.
They don't allow them at all because of the problem.
Well, because some of this is emerging awareness, is it not, to the effect, the human effect.
The wind turbines are getting bigger and bigger. You're talking about
and
now
the
wind
bigger
turns,
they get,
yes.
the more infrasound
Absolutely.
You have.
Directly related.
So there may have been a time when they were relatively small, they would still produce infrasound, but not to the extent of the huge ones not
That's
being
correct.
Built.
That's correct. The slow speed that these things rotate, the larger ones, they rotate a bit slower in most cases.
Yeah.
It's another factor. So the design, if you like, of the wind turbines is a factor, and the newer turbines, which are getting bigger and bigger, and I've heard of 9-megawatt wind turbines.
Yes, you know, they're talking about it, yeah. They're going to put them on concrete pylons because
the weight.
So that they can actually put them higher into the air.
Yes.
So that would make... larger amounts of infrasound.
I would think so, yes.
Yeah, okay. Here is Al on the line from Collingwood. Al, do you have a question for Kevin Dooley?
Yes, I do. I'm not sure whether that large turbine in Port Elgin is up and running, but it's...
Yes, it is. I can guarantee you it is.
Do we have any idea how many people are sick then in that area because of the infrasound?
I don't know the exact number. We're going to be talking to Greg Smalls in a few days, and he's organized a group there who tried to campaign to have the thing stopped. There are hundreds of homes within the 500-meter area, and in dozens of the homes there are problems. I don't know if we can put...
That would be a good place to do a real scientific study as to the effect of this turbine.
We are actually doing a little bit of work up there.
Yeah.
But It's a fairly small turbine as turbines go. That's only about a 500 kilowatt turbine. I think it was actually reduced in its power output.
It was reduced in its power output in size from the original planning, I believe.
Right, because of the infrasound and the disturbance that it had.
But that doesn't mean it's not producing infrasound.
No, it is. We know it is. And there are several people up there who want to be the first people to try out this infrasound suppression
system. This machine that might suppress that. Yeah. Al, thanks very much for your question. Here's Sid on the line from Grimsby. Sid, you have a question.
Well, actually, I'm calling not about wind turbines on the ground, but quite a long while ago, I read something about suspended turbines on balloons that would be tethered to the ground.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if...
that's exactly what we were talking about. Sid, thanks very much for that reminder.
Yes,
so this is happening now?
It is. I recently heard of testing that's going on a wind turbine, which is a kite type of an affair, which is tethered to the ground with three long cables, if you like, and it floats up there. And I don't know what happens when the wind drops, but
that could be a problem in itself. But the fact that there's no standard, no tower, means no infrasound.
That's right.
All right. Now, you're aware of the study going on federally about health effects of wind turbines. What's your view on that? What can you tell us about that?
Well, actually, I was speaking to the principal researcher just this past week. David Michaud, and I was pretty impressed with the way that they're going about it. I think that it's going to be a very good study. It's being done without basically without people understanding or knowing what they're participating in.
What they're looking for, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And the equipment that they're using is pretty advanced.
Will they be interested? They should be interested in your work, as a matter of fact.
Well, perhaps it'll come. I don't know. He wasn't... aware of the infrasound device because I haven't told many people about it. So, but he certainly had read my papers.
Yeah. Is there more to be discovered here in the relationship between the wind turbine, the production of the infrasound? You have the machine that that will work. You know it'll work, think
it's pretty. It's pretty solid theory.
Yeah, okay.
It's a matter of getting the equipment to operate as we want it to. That's all.
How is it going to be? Would that be an expensive thing you'd have to put in your house?
At the moment, it's pretty expensive.
It would be.
But if it's based on how many of these things you can make as to how low the cost can go.
Well, maybe that's something a wind turbine company could be putting in houses that are a little too close to the.
That's, I think, where it belongs. Yes.
Well, because there is no evidence anywhere that the. Building of these wind turbines is decreasing in any way, so we have to find a way to protect the people, don't we?
Absolutely. I think it's very important.
All right. A lot of calls here. Now, if you don't get through, send me an email at fightback@goldhawk.com. We'll take calls as long as we can here. Here's Patrick in Georgetown. Patrick, what are your thoughts? Have you got a question?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just quickly want to say, I live up in Mount Forest, so we're going along Highway 109 to Highway 6. We see the Five Sisters, and then a little off to the west, we see another whole group. We call them the Five Sisters.
I like them.
I they're nice looking. I don't understand why they don't build them out in the lakes, like Georgian Bay, Lake Ontario, out in the middle of the lakes where there's always wind out there. It's always flat. It's not disrupting people. This doesn't make sense. This is another Canadian thing.
Patrick. I'm going to you listen for the answer now. I want to thank you for the call. What happens if you build them? We had a proposal here in Toronto to build them out from the bluffs, and that fell apart. Would that make any difference?
I don't think so. The way that this infrasound travels, depending on which way the wind's blowing, if it's pointing at you, you're going to be getting just as much of it as if you lived
because the
next
well, how
to it.
Far theoretically can it travel? This funnel that you're talking about, this tube.
Don't really know.
You measured it at 125 kilometers, and it was still there.
It's still there. The amplitude was reduced, and it wouldn't cause any difficulty at that distance. But the fact that you can still measure it that far says it doesn't drop in magnitude very much as a function of the distance. It doesn't follow the normal rules of sound dispersion.
And outside of suspending the turbines with balloons in the middle of the air, there's no way around, there's no technology that would get around the absence of a tower. You've got to have something to put it on, right?
There may be things that they can do to improve the or reduce the interaction of the tower with the aerodynamics, or not so much the aerodynamics, but the acoustic conditions on the blades. It's not an aerodynamic problem. This is an acoustic issue.
Right.
There may be things that can be done to improve that.
All right. Kevin Dooley, I want to thank you very much for coming in and taking us through some of the science. Will you come back?
I certainly will.
All right, because this issue is not going away anytime soon. Kevin Dooley, a researcher and inventor, retired engineer. Is that the best way to describe you?
No, inventor.
Inventor. Okay, you like inventor. All right. Kevin Dooley, thank you very much.
Gold Hawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.